You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 277 of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk One Star Squadron number 3, Dark Knights of Steel number 4, World of Krypton number 3, Justice League Incarnate number 4, Batman number 120, Detective Comics 1051, Peacemaker season 1 episode 8, Mern After Reading, and Doom Patrol season 3 episode 9, Evil Patrol. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. Alright, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC's Fables returns after a nearly 7-year hiatus. Fables number 151 goes on sale May 17th, with DC planning for the series to run at least 11 more issues afterwards.
It's not a series that I've read before, Drew, but it is an incredibly, incredibly popular and successful series, so not surprised if the creator was wanting to come back and do more. I'm not surprised that they would do it, because I'm sure only money is awaiting them.
Yeah, I haven't read the series before, too, but I know of it, and I know it was a popular series. And who knows, maybe I'll check it out sometime. All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. DC's canceling more titles, Teen Titans Academy and Suicide Squad. Teen Titans Academy writer Tim Sheridan has announced that the series will be ending in May after 15 issues. And then Suicide Squad number 15 will be its last issue on May 3rd.
One detail in this that I found interesting, Drew, was that the Teen Titans Academy was originally only planned for 12 issues, at least from this writer. I don't know if he thought that the title would keep going with someone else or if he thought that it would end at issue 12. But that's the next issue coming up, and we can clearly see that whatever story we've been reading is meant to come to a climax in issue 12. And on the one hand, obviously, like I said, you can see the clear arc from 1 to 12, but also it makes even less sense some of the decisions that they made for this book. If he really only ever intended to write 12, his plotting and pacing is baffling, I think is the best way to put it. I do not understand what the heck he was doing for the middle, 8 issues of the run. If he didn't intend to go past 12 in the first place, Drew, what the heck?
I forgot that wasn't an ongoing series. I didn't remember it being a miniseries, so
I don't know that it was. He just had 12 issues planned. This writer, and like I said, I don't know if it was meant to be, you know, the book itself would stop at 12 or if he was going to stop at 12 and then somebody else would take over. That part was a little unclear to me, but he himself said, I originally only intended to do 12, but then it was doing so well, according to him, that they asked me to stay on and do some more issues. And what I think probably ended up happening was they did that. They said that early. Then the issues that we personally have had with the book crept up, and I'm not surprised that a mere 3 issues later, they're like, yeah, you know, actually, on second thought.
Yeah, I was not surprised whatsoever to see that was being canceled, whether miniseries or not.
I just, Drew, it made it, the fact that he only, for what, like I said, whether the book or just his own run was only meant to go 12, that it makes no sense to me the way that he wrote those 12 issues. He was plotting it like it was meant to. I felt strongly that the way that he was writing was banking on getting like 30 issues. Because he was so slow and taking so much time developing these characters and not moving the plot forward. And then to just have, and to have intended to stop at 12, Drew, that's brutal.
Yeah, totally agree. The other title that surprised me was Suicide Squad. Of course, we haven't been reviewing it, but I guess I just assumed because of the movie and Peacemaker television series that the title was probably doing well. Apparently not.
The problem is, Drew, they've done this repeatedly for, I would say, the past decade almost. of where they keep trying to make a Suicide Squad ongoing happen, because it has happened in the past. Obviously, everybody knows the very famous Ostrander run that kind of started the whole thing, but it never is able to sustain itself. They really ought to just move to miniseries for, and I know I say this for a lot of books, but Suicide Squad, I think in particular, is very well suited to a miniseries, because then you can really keep true to the sort of core tenet of the book, which is that these guys are expendable, right? If you're writing an ongoing, you've got to keep certain characters alive. And as you go, you're going to be more and more reluctant to kill any of those characters, and it becomes less of a Suicide Squad and more of just like, anti-heroes doing good things, maybe in an ugly way.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. That makes sense. And we've been seeing a lot more miniseries from DC lately. So we've been reviewing quite a few of them. So we're starting to see that trend where they're starting to go to miniseries.
I get why they keep doing it, Drew, and they often are co coinciding with them either putting out an animated or one of their two live action Suicide Squad things. Like, they keep trying, but it's just not working. And I do feel like at a certain point, you're just, I mean, the definition of insanity, right, Drew, is to keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. Like, just maybe stop trying to make an ongoing happen for whatever reason. People just aren't interested in buying it on a monthly basis. I do think people have a lot of interest when the miniseries come out, though, and I think that's what really would work better for it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And some of those choices have to do with what do I want to spend my money on?
Yes. And I think that's a big thing that both Marvel and DC need to kind of come to terms with, is that you can't put out, like, it's nice in theory to put out all of these titles, but people just aren't in a position to buy that many books right now. It is what it is. So, you got to make some choices. And I think if you make it easier, and again, by leaning into the graphic novel market, that makes it easier for people to choose to just buy your book, right? Because it's a one-time purchase. And they've bought the whole thing.
Yep, makes a lot of sense. All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. Aquaman Arthur Curry is getting a Black Label 3-issue miniseries this summer that will explore Point Nemo, that is a dumping ground for spaceships, and kick off a psychological horror mystery. Aquaman Andromeda Number 1 goes on sale June 7th from writer Ram V and artist Christian Ward. Now, I'm kind of excited about this miniseries because it's from Ram V, who's been doing the Justice League Dark story. So I'm kind of excited to see what he could do with Aquaman.
And not only Aquaman, but like a book where he has license to get a little bit weirder and potentially darker, or whatever, however, whatever route he wants to go, not beholden to continuity. So yeah, Drew, I'm really excited. I continue to just be a huge fan of the Black Label books that they have going. I feel like they're pretty consistently some of the best books that they're putting out.
Totally agree. All right, in other DC news, Rorschach creative team, writer Tom King and artist Jorge Fornes reunite for a Black Label 12-issue miniseries titled Danger Street, which is based off the multi-character crime drama from the mid-1970s. Danger Street number 1 goes on sale May 3rd.
Drew, I know absolutely nothing about it, but I'm already in.
Me too. They did such a phenomenal job on the Rorschach miniseries. I'm excited for this one too, and I don't know anything about that Danger Street title either.
mean, we're seeing it right now again with Human Target, where I'm aware that they've done like a TV show with it. I know nothing really about Human Target other than the character existed. And I'm absolutely loving that book too. Like, it's just when you I feel like when you consistently show that you can nail these miniseries, like, I'm gonna give you the benefit of the doubt and want to check those books out. And again, I think it demonstrates a route that DC is clearly is starting to invest in and go down, which is, I might not be interested in reading Human Target monthly, right, for 50 issues, but I am really interested if you've established that, hey, we do these like tightly plotted 12-issue stories, can you commit to 12 issues? Well, yeah, especially the first issue's good. Like, yeah, okay, I'm in on 12. It's the same thing with this. Like, Danger Street, imagine them announcing that as an ongoing. I think I'd have a lot more questions.
Yeah, me too. 'Cause an ongoing is a lot more of a commitment than a mini series. All right, up next for DC News, Wonder Twins live action movie is in the works for HBO Max. I'm excited about this, especially since the article said it was going to be based off of Russell's run.
That is really exciting, Drew. That was sort of my, when I initially saw the headline, I was like, man, that's interesting, but I'm really mostly interested if they're doing the kind of satirical version that we got from Russell. So that's good news. And I think, honestly, I think that's the route to go, Drew, because I think if you tried to play the Wonder Twins seriously, I mean, I don't know that it would work, right? Like, you don't have to do it exactly the way that Mark Russell did it, but like, I think you gotta go comedy, don't you?
Yeah, otherwise, if you try to do a serious drama or something, probably just be lame.
Yeah, imagine a gritty, like the gritty reboot of Wonder Twins. Oh, God.
Oh man. But yeah, that's exciting news, and it gives us a little something different on HBO Max.
I like, yeah, it's cool because obviously we could see them continuing to invest in expanding their DC portfolio on HBO Max, which is exciting for us. But I also like that they're, looking at different areas, right? It's not just all Batman or, all the just Trinity characters, but no, like we're getting a Wonder Twins project based on a short satirical miniseries. That's cool. Like that's where you can see that they're really looking at a lot of their options and not just, somebody being like, well, Batman sells.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, James Gunn confirms that Peacemaker has been renewed for season two.
It's awesome, Drew. I'm not surprised. The only thing that I wasn't sure was I didn't know if James Gunn intended it to be just a one season project, similar to what we saw with Watchmen. But I mean, it's so successful. I mean, everybody I talk to loves the show that's seen it. So I'm thrilled. I was thrilled for two reasons. One, I'm glad that we're getting more seasons, but also I'm glad to know that it's intended to have more seasons. Like that's really exciting.
Yes, and I the article said James Gunn was planning on writing this one too, so that's exciting. He's staying personally involved with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think we can see how much the show has benefited from a consistent creative vision. So that would be I'm glad they're doing that, Drew, because I think that would have been a pretty grave mistake to have not done that.
Exactly. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Modern Musicology is a podcast covering topics on rock and pop, ranging mostly from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, with occasional excursions into the 60s and aughts, and even occasionally the 2010s. Anything is fair game. Classic rock, R&B, folk, punk, prog, rap, metal, and way more, with two Americans, one Brit, a ton of fun, and a healthy dose of cynicism.
Hey Dad, what's the Soul Forge podcast?
The Soul Forge podcast is all about life, the universe, and everything.
Is it good for kids?
Oh no, it's not good for kids.
Is it geeky?
Oh, it can be geeky, but it can also be serious. We talk about life, sex, dating, and mental health, and so much more.
Where can you find a Soul Forge podcast?
You can find it everywhere. iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, Amazon Music. And the ESO network.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers!
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 We got spoilers!
Spoilers!
For you! We got spoilers!
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 We've got spoilers!
Spoilers!
For you! For you.
right, let's talk One Star Squadron number 3. Superman visits the board of directors for Heroes for You and tells them that he believes turning heroes into employees cheapens heroism. Superman believes that Heroes for You was a bad idea. The board also has a nasty complaint letter about Red Tornado that Power Girl sent, signed by most of the downtown office. Red Tornado tells Terry, Minuteman, that per company policy, he should be fired. Red Tornado is giving Terry one more chance after being banned from Comic-Con. Jack-O-Lantern flies to rescue people whose ship is sinking just off the coast of Ireland when he gets a notification on his app for an urgent request for a Halloween party. The next day, Superman visits the board of directors again for Heroes for You. After the Jack-O-Lantern incident, the Justice League is withdrawing its endorsement from Heroes for You, effective immediately. Red Tornado gets a call to meet the board of directors first thing in the morning. Red Tornado is worried about getting fired. When he shows up the next morning, the board does not want to fire him. They want to sell the company, which means they need to cut costs. Instead, Red Tornado is directed to fire half of the staff, starting with Power Girl.
Well, leave it to Russell to once again really dig into the just absolute scum of corporate business.
Yes, and I like that twist at the end where, you know, I thought Red Tornado was going to be gone too. The way he's been writing the series. And then we get that twist with, get rid of Power Girl.
Well, and what's interesting with that, Drew, is that the thing that makes the twist work even better is that you know that they would have fired him if they wouldn't have. Everything is profit-driven, right? If they weren't threatened with Superman withdrawing his endorsement of their company, he's gone, right? But all of a sudden they realize that, oh, crap, our company's about to go in the tank, we need to sell it before that happens. All of a sudden now Red Tornado is the more profitable decision and getting rid of Power Girl is the more profitable decision. Again, you can just, it's just entirely without humanity, right? It is purely a numbers-based decision thing. And it's just one of the things I really like about his writing is how he's able to be, in my opinion, a very funny writer, but also expose some really ugly truths about our society.
Yes, and the Jack-O-Lantern thing. I was like, really, dude? You're gonna, first of all, he flies there, and then you got people, you know, need to be saved. He's just kind of floating in the air, messing on his app. Then he gets that other, oh, this is a better offer, and takes off. I'm like, really? No wonder Superman's upset. I bet they didn't show it, but I have a feeling that Superman is probably the one that came out there and saved all those people.
Yeah. Yeah, again, it's just one of the, like, a really funny scene, but also you're just kind of like, it also rings true, and you're like, oh, that makes me feel bad.
Yes. And then the other thing the story's been doing a good job of, we've been getting Minuteman story throughout this, and we'll probably see how his next job goes in the next one, because things have not been going well for him.
No, not at all. And we've been getting, to an even lesser extent, the story of the hero who's clearly dealing with brain trauma and can't really remember who he is. And we've been seeing someone at least at one point sold Red Tornado on what the idea of Heroes for You was supposed to be, which was for helping heroes get back on their feet or be a resource for the superhero community to help take care of each other. And instead it's just turned into a soulless corporation. And that's been interesting too.
Yes, it has been. All right. Well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Dark Knights of Steel number 4, The Land of Magnus. Alfred and Bruce are sitting around a campfire when Alfred tells Bruce the story of his origin. The elves arrive on Earth after escaping the destruction of their own. They thrived with their newfound powers and built a home hidden in the forest. The elves watch from afar and listen to the nearby kingdom at nighttime, learning the language and the customs. They found happiness here despite the destruction of their own world. When the elves learn that the volcano Mount Kristoff would soon erupt, the two scientists draft plans for how the Wayne's kingdom could survive the disaster by building trenches to divert the lava and to how to sew masks for the hot ash and smoke. The elves give the plans to the Wayne's advisor, Alexander Luther. Now, Alexander Luther who was stubborn and prideful, had his own beliefs. He burned the plans. And when the elves discovered the kingdom hadn't evacuated, Jor-El confronts Luther in front of the king, calling him an idiot. Laura and Jor-El leave baby Kal-El with Queen Martha, and the elves save the kingdom because it's the right thing to do. And the elves were loved by all. Luther's name and title were taken from him. Luther was banished from the kingdom, and we see that Luther discovered that Mount Christoph contained more than just destruction, and it transformed him into the Green Man. The Waynes and the elves became close friends. Thomas put everything into his kingdom, and Martha felt lonely. One night became a bad mistake between Jor-El and Martha that hurt the people they loved. That is, until Bruce was born. Thomas couldn't father children, and the resentment he harbored faded as Bruce grew. Thomas loved Bruce as much as any father has ever loved a son, and Bruce healed all wounds. The Green Man destroyed the carriage carrying the king and queen and their son. Martha and Thomas were killed, but Bruce survived. Martha asked Jor-El and Laura to become king and queen until they could convince the people that one day let their bastard child be their king. On the cusp of war, Alfred and Bruce mount their horses and ride for home. To be continued.
Another really great issue, Drew. It was one of those ones I was so absorbed in the story that when it ended, I was like, wait, what, already?
You weren't the only one. This issue was a fast read. I was involved in the story, too, because I was really wanting to learn about the origin of Bruce and of the, you know, the elves coming and what had happened between, you know, the stuff we hadn't seen yet. And it was very interesting. I was surprised it took the whole issue.
One thing I found interesting, Drew, was the twist that the Green Man was actually Luther, who's actually also the Joker. I do have to say a tiny little nitpick, because I don't like that he combined three major characters into one, to the point where I'm almost kind of like hoping that there's a second Green Man, so to speak. Because I know we got a very, very brief glimpse of him earlier when Jor-El was assassinated, but he didn't really act like the Joker in that scene. And so it makes me wonder if he's still, quote, the Green Man with this Green Lantern ring, or if somebody else has acquired that ring since then. I don't know.
Now, I can tell you, because I was surprised when the Green Man was Alexander Luther, because I was for sure it was somebody else. And I didn't go back and look, but I was for sure this was a different Green Man. And I actually should have took the time to go back and look, because...
Well, again, it is the ring. He does find a Green Lantern ring, or some version of a Green Lantern ring that makes him this, but also whatever the energy reaction when he found it turned him into the Joker also. And so it is certainly possible, Drew, that somebody else has since acquired the ring, which is obviously very consistent with Green Lantern-related stuff anyway. So I'm a little bit curious, but I will admit a lot of it is just bias on my part, because I'm not thrilled that he combined three guys into one. There's just so much opportunity for stuff. It seems like a little bit of a shame that Luther, Joker, and Green Lantern are all the same character. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Honestly, they could have left the Joker part out of it.
Well, but it's bad. But you kind of... This is always my personal, very subjective complaint with the Joker, is it feels like everybody is beholden to use the Joker anytime they do a new Batman story. So honestly, Drew, I wasn't shocked when we saw Luther find the green meteor and it blew up in his face and they hinted that he was still alive. I was like, well, he's going to be the Joker. And then sure enough, he's the Joker, but he was also the Green Lantern at the same time. And that was, I was like, oh, come on, Tom, like... Three, like, come on. And part of that frustration, Drew, is because he's done such a good job doing these new medieval versions of all these characters that, in a greedy sense, I wanted to see his version of all of them. And it felt like I got cheated, which, again, is greedy on my part. But I was like, oh, but I really want to see your versions of all those characters, not just them bundled into one dude.
You got the bundle. I
know. But anyway, my main point is that I'm not shocked that he's also the Joker, because I feel like it's like almost contractually obligated when you do a Batman story, especially because he is, in theory at least, the main character of this book. Like, I mean, it had to be the Joker, Drew.
Yeah, I guess you're right on that. I mean, it didn't have to be, but...
To be clear, I agree with you, and if the Joker wasn't involved at all, I personally would not be upset, but clearly DC does not agree.
Still a really good issue, though.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I don't want to sound like... It was a very minor nitpick, and again, it was more from a place of like, but I want more than anything else.
All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, World of Krypton number 3. Allura has Kara tutored in Kryptonian history. General Zod and his security force are arresting protesters of the councils. Jor-El presents his findings on the deterioration of the core of planet Krypton to the Science Council and suggests that an energy shield be put around the core in a pocket dimension. Krypton's people would have to sacrifice the use of energy to maintain the shield. The current chair of the Science Council steps down and Jor-El is voted its new leader. Jor-El adopts a dog named Crypto and leaves a very generous donation. Zod comes to Jor-El with an idea on how to save Krypton.
Again, Drew, I feel like every time I say the same thing about these issues, which it was fine. It was not a bad issue of a comic by any means. But also, why? That's remains my biggest complaint about the book, is it's doing absolutely nothing new.
Yeah, you're right. And it's hitting all the points it needs to hit to be a origin story that we've seen before.
And again, I mean, it's good for people, I guess, that aren't familiar with the downfall of Krypton, but how many people that aren't aware of that are reading this book, Drew? I can't imagine it's a large percentage. You know what I mean? I feel like most people who are, and I know obviously you always get new readers and young readers that are getting into the, you know, the hobby and into the genre, but most people, I would argue, that who are unfamiliar with the origin of Krypton don't care to find out. Like, I would say if you did a pie chart of the people reading this book and you did percentage of never read any version of the origin of Krypton and those who have, I would say the pie chart is going to be in, by far the majority will be people who already know how the story goes.
Yeah, I could see that.
I don't know. It's one of those things, again, it's fine. It's a fine book. I mean, I did not dislike my time reading it. It was enjoyable, but I knew not every single plot detail, right? But I continue to know all of the beats relatively that it's going to hit. And it just makes me question what the point of the book is.
Yep, I agree with you. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League Incarnate number 4. Dr. Multiverse tells the Justice League Incarnate to save the multiverse, Darkseid must win. Darkseid calls forth his army and asks if the Justice League Incarnate plans to join him. Thomas Wayne Batman tries to kill Dr. Multiverse with a syringe full of poison. The Great Darkness has control of him. Darkseid destroys Thomas Wayne with his Omega Beams. Darkseid takes the multiverse crack from Maya and his army boom tubes out. Justice League Incarnate heads back to Earth 7 to find the rest of their team. Darkseid tries to kill the Great Darkness with the multiverse crack, but it doesn't work. The Great Darkness takes the crack to add to the Oblivion machine. Then the Great Darkness stomps on Darkseid. The Justice League Incarnate finds the House of Heroes. Calvin uses his Brainiac belt clip to bring the Harbinger AI online. Aquawoman and the other missing Justice League Incarnate heroes show up, all infected and under the control of the Great Darkness.
I don't really have a whole lot of positive things to say about this, Drew.
Not surprised.
I ranted at length about him last week. The way that this book, Drew, was exactly what I was ranting about, where he is jamming his fingers into everybody else's stories and then claiming responsibility. But what really was going on was my genius idea, which was this other evil behind all these other evils, which were evils behind the evils when they came out. And then there's another evil behind that evil. And it's just like, Josh, just shut up, dude. Just shut up and tell your own story. Stop trying to tell me that you actually masterminded this plan that was behind Crisis on Infinite Earths, Infinite Crisis, and Final Crisis, that you're the genius behind all of it.
Shut up. Just get your story over with so that I can get on and read somebody else's books when you're done with this.
Oh, man. You notice when I recap the story, I didn't recap any of his version of how DC started.
It's just, why does it all have to be a conspiracy behind the conspiracy behind the conspiracy, Drew? Why can't he just tell his own crisis event? Like, even, I will say, obviously the three previous crises events tied to each other, right? But they were just like continuations. In my opinion, when I read Infinite Crisis, I didn't feel like Johns was like rewriting Crisis on Infinite Earths or like retconning Crisis on Infinite Earths. He was continuing the story. He took the end of that story and said, what if these characters popped up again and were changed because of the outcome of that and wanted to do something different? That's his story, right? And then Final Crisis comes out and Grant Morrison's like, well, what if what happened because of the end of Infinite Crisis that fundamentally changed something in the DC universe and that needed, and what are the consequences coming out of that? Josh Williamson looks at these three and is like, but what if I made up something that made it look like I made all three of them up? You know what I mean? Like, that's the big difference. The first three I know technically some people view them as a trilogy. It's, I think, generous because they're written so far apart and were clearly meant as their own stories, but they like continue the story, right? Josh is going back and rewriting these stories and saying, yeah, everything you knew about Crisis on Infinite Earths is actually wrong. Let me tell you what was really happening. And everything you knew about Infinite Crisis, that's also wrong. Everything you knew about Metal, also wrong. And you know what I mean? Like, it's him rewriting these stories to suit his vision. And so everybody else's stories now have to be fundamentally altered on some level to change the way you look at them so that his story makes sense and works.
You put it exactly right, Cletus. That's why we had that big, long, the beginning of the, we had to go back to the beginning of time to retell Williamson's story and hit to fit his version.
It's also not a clever story, Drew. I think that's my biggest problem with it. His big mastermind twist is that darkness is the villain behind all of this. Wow, Drew, that really blew my mind. What go out on a limb. Like, oh yeah, what's really behind all of this is darkness itself has manifested and wants to return to darkness. I've never read a story like that, Drew. I can't think of any time where that's been a plot.
It's just not the darkness. It's the great darkness.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's not even original. Like, he's doing all of this stupid retconning, and his story isn't even unique or original. I was just like, come on, man. Like, if you're going to do all this, at least make it worth it.
Yeah, and it hasn't been. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batman number 120. Badnesia. Detective Kaha sneaks Batman out of the morgue in a body bag. Batman is still blind by whatever Abyss did to him. Lex Luthor is in his tower in Badnesia when the electricity goes out. Lex Luthor activates a button on his cufflink and it transforms into a bat suit, one he made for Batman in case he took Lex's offer to join Batman Inc. Back at Detective Kaha's apartment, Batman thinks his blindness is caused by nanotech or a bioinfection. He doesn't have the tools to do a full scan there. Detective Kaha tells Batman her story. Her parents went missing, just disappeared without a trace. No clues, nothing. When she graduated from the academy, she went into missing persons, and that's how she got the Abyss case. Batman breaks into Lex Luthor's prison with the help of Detective Kaha, and Batman tries to convince Batman Inc. to meet him on the roof, but they are not happy to see him. Batman explains that Abyss isn't dead and they're all innocent men. Lex Luthor shows up and Batman states, "How can I see you?" Lex states their only hope for stopping Abyss is by working together. Lex may have funded Batman Inc., but Abyss is their leader. Abyss asks Batman to join him in killing Lex Luthor.
Let's, again, Drew, let's fundamentally alter our understanding of some of these previously established Batman, that they're now all willing to change the clear core tenets that they agreed on with Batman so that they can kill Lex Luthor. Of all people, Drew, that's who they decide is the one that they're okay killing, not the Joker. They didn't all band together and be like, we have to kill the Joker. Really, Drew? Like, this is, again, this is my big issue with Williamson, is that he, like, fundamentally does this stuff where he's like, I'm going to introduce sweeping changes to these characters, and they're stupid. Like, they don't even make sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you would... One of the big points he made at the beginning of the story was the fact that Batman ain't killed.
Right, and he was shocked by that, right? Like... Josh himself established the point that Bruce was, the reason that he was investigating this was that he couldn't believe that they would actually have killed someone, right? And so then he investigates it and it finds out, no, actually they didn't kill him. Well, that makes sense. That's why Bruce was so confused that they'd do it. Oh no, actually it was all a conspiracy to get him there to then convince him to help them kill Lex Luthor. What, Drew? Who? What? You can't write a story in which people who are close allies to Bruce freaking Wayne, I will not kill anyone, Bruce Wayne, and their plan centers around them convincing him to help him kill someone? What?
Exactly. Williamson, you don't get Batman.
I think he understands that, Drew. I don't think that he understands that that plan is stupid because of that. You know what I'm saying? I don't think he thinks that Batman will kill someone. I think he gets that. I just think he's missing the missing puzzle piece there where, like, I know Batman won't kill people, and I know these people think Lex Luthor deserves to die. But he doesn't understand the connection there, that them asking Bruce to do that doesn't make sense. Ugh.
Exactly.
It's okay. He's only writing all of the important books. Oh, I'm sorry to our listeners who don't want to hear me rant about him, but, like, I can't help it. DC invested all of their eggs into his basket, Drew. He's writing all of their major books.
He's writing most of their major books. At least we still have a few titles that aren't under Williamson's control, but will probably be influenced by his Dark Crisis event coming up.
Wonder Woman, I think, is the only character that is not under his sphere of influence right now. I know technically Superman is outside his purview, but I don't really think he will be, Drew, once he starts doing his Justice League and Crisis stuff. Wonder Woman feels like the only one that really is kind of avoiding his clutches, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right. All right, we also had the backup story in this. Mia is in the Batmobile, and she contacts Batman, who states he is below in one of the aqueduct tunnels. Mia explains the creatures are Kappa, mythical creatures from Japanese folklore. They inhabit rivers and streams. They have webbed feet and hands. They're strong swimmers and are about the size of a human child. Their favorite food is cucumbers. When Mia loses contact with Batman, she draws a map of his location from the Batmobile's computer. When Mia finds Batman, he's attacked by the Kappa. Mia distracts the Kappa with cucumbers. Mia spots a dead body, thinking it's her friend Lindsay, but Batman states it is not. That is Emily Corker, who was reported missing 2 days ago. Batman was too late to help her. Lindsay shows up in the tunnel calling out Mia's name. To be continued.
This story has been fine, Drew. I've been interested in it, but it's just been so short and so little has happened in these that it's hard for me to get super invested each time. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'd be a lot more interested in this story if I had read all, was it, three parts so far together.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it feels kind of like Justice League Dark to me, where the story is good, but it's short.
It's short, and in this case, I feel like they're doing less with the time than Justice League Dark did.
I felt like Ram V had a really good sense of, like, I've got only, what, 5 pages? So I've got to pack as much story as I can into 5 pages. This feels like it's still paced at a normal comic book setting, but it's only got 5 pages. And so you only end up with, like, a fifth of the story, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, plus I think Ram V's a better writer.
Well, yes, I certainly agree with that. Again, I really don't think this is bad, and I think I'd actually be really into the story if I had read them all together. So I don't want to really criticize the writer too much, because they can only, you know, they can only control the fact that they have a backup so much. It's just a shame, because I really don't think the backup format is well suited to this story.
Agreed. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week. Detective Comics 1051. Months ago, Psycho Pirate comes to town hidden in a suitcase. His longtime friend Toby finds him. Toby has an idea on how to pull the greatest hustle of all time. Psycho Pirate just wants to stay hidden because he has very dangerous people looking for him. Of course, we know that Psycho Pirate failed Darkseid in the Infinite Frontier and caused Barry Allen to crack the multiverse. I don't know if that's who he's running from, but that's what I'm assuming. The Party Crashers are not happy that Dr. Ware has provided them half a supply of the drug Numb. The other half is just salt pills. Penguin is also not happy with Dr. Ware providing them half a shipment of ineffective product. Dr. Meridian still insists on seeing Dr. Ocean before she makes a recommendation to Mayor Nakano. She has some questions about the medication that some patients are on. Dr. Ware calls Mayor Nakano and offers him a tour of Arkham Tower, and Mayor Nakano makes time for that afternoon. Mayor Nakano is eager to see Arkham Tower for himself because he wants to cure his wife. Day 18. After the tour, Mayor Nakano has agreed to sign the check after the new patients arrive. Dr. Ware tells Psycho Pirate just a few more days. Day 19. Psycho Pirate loses control. Anna Vulsion recognizes Dick as Little Baby Bat Boy. Helena is in a session with Dr. Meridian. Helena tells Dr. Meridian to call Dr. Frau. Helena joins the battle and battles Nero the 19th, who is after Dr. Meridian. Dr. Ware makes it to Psycho Pirate's office, and he puts the mask back on him. Psycho Pirate is able to get everyone to fall asleep and tells them to forget.
Drew, I'm really interested in the story that they've crafted here, much more than I thought I would be. But as we talked about last issue, the main backbone of this plot is this con, right? And it just doesn't make sense to me. And I know that the con is supposed to be flawed, right? Because ultimately it fails. I know that's part of it. But this con is so deeply, fundamentally flawed, Drew. I don't believe that somebody would try. It's so unnecessarily complicated. It just doesn't make sense to me, Drew. They're asking Psycho Pirate to stay awake 24/7 to keep these people in line
for a month.
For a month so that they can get a paycheck, when clearly, as they proved, they bring in Mayor Nakano and Psycho Pirate manipulates him for like a minute and they're able to get the promise of a check within a couple days. Drew, why wouldn't you just go to him right away with Psycho Pirate, brainwash him into giving you a check, and then making instead of building an entire skyscraper, starting a side hustle with drugs where you don't even have enough of a supply, so you're just pissing off both sides of the criminal community? What, Drew? This, like, you know what I mean? Like, the con is so dumb. It's so dumb.
I totally agree with you, Cletus. Why wouldn't you just take Psycho Pirate straight to Mayor Nakano, use his powers on him, and get your check?
Drew, all of this would make more sense if it was meant to be a long con where they were trying to continually get money, right? And then they would, instead of funneling it into Arkham to pay for whatever these, quote, drugs are that don't really exist because it's actually Psycho Pirate, you instead keep funneling the money continuously to yourself, and it's a long-term get-rich scheme. That makes, honestly, it's still a flawed plan, right? But it makes more sense because the goal is instead to keep continuous funding, right? To really, really get a lot of money. This is clearly just get one check and then get out. And if that's the case, there are so many unnecessary steps involved in that.
Yes, it's very complicated. And I got the impression that this Toby guy, he's supposed to be a con artist, but I'm sorry, I didn't get the feeling he was that professional of a con artist.
And that's sort of, I wonder, Drew, if this is where the writer is right walking this tightrope of they need to show you that they're not quite on their game, because ultimately, as they showed at the beginning, it fails horribly, right? But on the same hand, you need to lay the groundwork for that, but you also need to show that the person is competent enough that they could set up that scenario in the first place. And as you mentioned, none of that has really demonstrated it. Like, this plan is so fundamentally stupid, it doesn't really make sense that they would have been able to get a skyscraper built. Drew, I cannot emphasize that enough. They got an entire building built with money from where? I don't know why that money that they got for, again, an entire skyscraper, why didn't they run away with that money?
Yes, that doesn't make sense either.
The money they got to fund a staff to care for an entire skyscraper worth of villains, they didn't take that money and run? What? True. I just make it make sense.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. All right, we also had the backup story, House of Arkham Part 5. Penguin adopts the boy to work for him at the Ice Lounge. He gives him a crappy place to stay, some money, and tells him he's not a prisoner. You will work, but your time is your own. On his way back to the Ice Lounge later that evening, a bully rams the boy's head into a brick wall. The boy needs to pay a toll for walking down the street. Penguin shows up and makes the bully kiss the street at the boy's feet. The Penguin kills the bully and tells the boy this is a good lesson. We don't always get what we want. To be continued. Where is this backup story going, Cletus?
I have no idea. I feel like this kid is getting, like, a nice mentorship under each of Batman's major villains. So I'm assuming next week or within a couple weeks he'll end up under the purview of Riddler or Two-Face after that. I don't know. He already had his parents killed by the Joker, so that's sort of his time mentorship under the Joker. He then spent time with Scarecrow. Now he's with Penguin. I don't really know where it's going. I will say, though, Drew, I'm not disinterested either, mostly because I'm like, how much is this kid going to go through?
I'm wondering if they're grooming him to be some villain down the line that they're going to use.
I agree. I think that's exactly where they're going. My concern is that it's going to end up face planning, where they're going to set up all of this. Why, theoretically, right, I could see where they would go with this, where this would be Batman's greatest villain yet, quotes around that, because he's been mentored by all of the greats. And so now all of a sudden you have all of the, like, wisdom, so to speak, from all of these pooled into one menace that Batman's not prepared for. And then it's just going to be some lame four-issue story that he gets beaten very easily, and then we never see the character again.
I could see that happening.
I mean, how many times have we read that's a version of that story? So,
yes, quite a few times. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
It was the dawn of another podcast. The Epsilon 3 is a dream given form. It's a home away from home for three guys to watch a 90s sci-fi classic TV show. Three guys with microphones over 3,249 miles apart, all alone in the night. The year is 2021. The name of the station is Babylon 5. The name of the podcast is the Epsilon 3. Veer, bring me a drink.
We have 30 seconds to describe Thunder Talk.
We got big interviews.
Super red music.
We're proud members of the ESO Network.
Yeah, they're probably going to fire us.
I wouldn't blame them.
We've got jokes.
Adult jokes.
And nerd junk.
Woke nerd junk.
All the woke nerd junk.
Find Thunder Talk on the internet.
And the ESO Network.
Ta-da!
And we're back. Let's talk Peacemaker, Season 1, Episode 6, Mern After Reading. Mern explains that the butterflies came to Earth because their planet was dying. The one in Goff is their leader. Her name is Ekstak Ilk Ilk. Mern just calls her Goff. Goff and the others decided they wanted to dominate the Earth, but Mern was the only one who disagreed. The others started leeching, using humans in positions of power as hosts. Peacemaker gives a classroom show and tell as he insults each of the kids when answering their questions, as well as other DC superheroes he's asked about. And I found that scene freaking hilarious. What's the worst show and tell you can have? There you go.
And yet the dad was thrilled. That was probably the best part, was that it was like a unquestionable disaster, and the dad was like elated at how well it went in his eyes.
Was that the guy with the mop we saw at the beginning of the series?
Yes. Yeah, it was.
That's what I thought. Augie Smith is released from prison, and Detective Song has a warrant for Peacemaker. Peacemaker and Vigilante escape through the roof of the trailer as the police surround it. They climb the trees and try to sneak through the woods. Vigilante falls from a tree, and the jar holding Goff breaks. Goff takes Detective Song as a host. Captain Locke shows up at Peacemaker's trailer. He shoots the cops that were chasing Peacemaker and makes sure Peacemaker and Vigilante get away. Captain Locke is able to obtain the diary that was planted at Peacemaker's place. Economo is able to track the delivery truck of the amber fluid back to a ranch. The belief is that the butterflies have a cow, a large animal they milk for amber goo, and there is only one of them on the planet. Without it, they die. Detective Song, Goff, greets the arriving butterflies as their little spacecrafts land. Detective Song takes the butterflies to the precinct to take on cops and prisoners as hosts. Even Captain Locke becomes a host. Captain Locke is on television and states that in the search of Christopher Smith's home was a diary written by the suspect. The diary maintains that the world is inhabited by aliens posing as human beings. It's the subject's job to find and kill them. The diary links Peacemaker not only to the murder of Annie Sturfhausen, but also the murders of Senator Roiland Goff and his family, and potentially three victims at the Glante Bottling Plant Massacre. Every police station across the country has one mandate this morning: find and stop Peacemaker by whatever means necessary.
True. When the butterflies taking over their human hosts is just brutal. And, like, you know it has to be, right? Like, when you find out that they're inside people's brains, like, you know fundamentally that that's not – that can't be a pleasant process. But then actually seeing it is just brutal.
I got to ask you a question, Cletus. I thought Captain Locke already had a butterfly in him. And then I was surprised when a butterfly took him as a host.
I was surprised initially, Drew, and then I sort of was trying to reflect on what we had seen from him so far. And he seemed to be familiar with Mern since before he was a host for a butterfly. And it's pretty well established that the original Mern was an absolute piece of garbage, right? And clearly, Locke was. When he kills the cops and then blames it on the ham burglar. I couldn't figure out who he was describing initially, and then he was like, and he said, "Robble, robble." I was like, oh my god, it's the
I wonder.
So I think what we find out, I do think that was meant to be a twist, Drew, but also it's one of those things that I like where it's a twist that makes sense in retrospect, because you kind of realize that guy was clearly just as messed up and as bad of a dude as whatever the original Mern was as well.
I'm very curious. I have a 22-year-old and a 19-year-old. I'm wondering if they haven't watched the show yet that I'm aware of. I'm wondering if they would even get the Hamburglar reference.
I don't know. I hope so.
I'm kind of curious about that when they watch this. I want to ask them, because really, I'm thinking about it, we haven't really seen the Ronald McDonald Gang for a long time.
I don't know if your kids would be aware of it, Drew. It was like back in the, I don't know, mid 2010s.
McDonald's briefly tried to reintroduce the Hamburglar as like a real human that was like a young millennial guy. And so it was just like this guy with like, you know, like stubble and a, like more of a like sleek looking quote Hamburglar costume. It was really, it was clearly like trying to connect with the youth, so to speak. It didn't last very long, but people, I remember when it came out, people my age were amused by them essentially trying to do like a sexy Hamburglar.
That'll be interesting to find
out. I highly recommend, for people who don't remember that ad campaign, I strongly recommend you go back and look it up because it's hilarious. And I kind of wish they had stuck with it a little longer. Not because it was great, but just because like I need a sexy Hamburglar in on my commercials.
Oh man, what another great episode of Peacemaker.
And what's interesting to me, Drew, is how much the plot escalated in this. I thought, I was like, oh, the next episode must be the last one. And then when we exited the episode to see how many were left, there was two. I was like, oh wow. Cause it feels like it's all coming to a head next episode. And so I can't wait. And obviously in some ways I'm sure it will, but we've still got two left. That's exciting.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited about them too. I've been wanting to watch the next episode all friggin' week.
One other thing I wanted to mention real quick is this episode, another reveal that we got is what exactly the journal was for and was about. That it wasn't actually his journal. It was clearly their way to scapegoat Peacemaker after this mission. It seems a couple things. One, it seems like Waller knew more about what was going on than maybe Myrn and the team thought she did. And clearly she, not the rest of the team, intended for Peacemaker to probably die at the end of this mission, to either have died and then scapegoat him post-mortem, or have this mission happen and then use him as a scapegoat to then kill him. Right. Or I don't know, maybe potentially also just keep him permanently in the Suicide Squad. Regardless, again, once again, really peeling back just what a manipulative mastermind Amanda Waller is. And it's going to be interesting, I think, to see her daughter wrestle with that, I think, these next two episodes.
I agree. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Doom Patrol, Season 3, Episode 9, Evil Patrol. Rita confronts Madame Rouge and tells her she's hidden the time machine where Madame Rouge will never find it. Madame Rouge states that Niles Calder defeated the Brotherhood of Evil. She'll just start it up again. Madame Rouge turns into a bird and flies away before Rita can stop her. Larry has a dream that he is going to be a bad father to the space parasite. Victor gets upset when his father won't hug him after he has his new skin. Jay asks Kane where the others of the underground went, and Kay states she doesn't need them anymore. Jane wants to find the others, and Kay wonders if Jane understands her at all. Clara comes to the mansion to see Cliff. Cliff forgot his Parkinson's pills and states that Cliff needs to see a real doctor. Rita thinks Clara might be Madame Rouge in disguise. When Cliff returns to the kitchen to talk to Clara, the baby is the only one there. Cliff picks up the baby. When Clara walks back into the room holding the baby, Cliff's baby turns into Madame Rouge. Madame Rouge kidnaps Cliff and takes him back to the Brotherhood of Evil in Florida. The plan is to swap Cliff's brain with the brain and infiltrate the Doom Patrol and destroy them from within. Kay investigates in the underground and comes upon some scary red eyes in a dark tunnel. Kay runs back to her room. When the door opens, Kay screams in the underground, and then Jane screams on the bus, shattering its windows and causing it to crash. The brain goes dancing around with Robot's body. Mala takes Madame Rouge and Cliff's brain that's in a jar and dumps them in the woods.
My girlfriend was displeased that we did not watch the next episode after this, Drew.
Well, it's the season finale.
Oh, no, I know. She was just like, come on, can we just like, can you record real quick so that we can do this next episode? Oh, she really was not wanting to stop there. I don't blame her. If we didn't do this podcast here, I absolutely would have watched the next episode as well. That was, man, I can't wait to see how it ends.
I know. I'm excited about it myself. It got really interesting this episode.
I found it interesting and honest, honestly, with how jealous and not happy for Vic the rest of the team was. They're like, what the heck? You just get to be a normal person now? Meanwhile, I'm nursing an alien parasite? That's your big change, and this is what I get? I thought that was interesting. I'm curious. So obviously the brain has moved his brain into Robot Man's body, and it appeared that Madame Rouge had Robot Man's brain with her when she was getting pushed down the hill. So I'm wondering, are we going to get a new look Robot Man potentially, Drew?
It's possible.
Are they just going to put him back into that same body? I almost wonder if we're going to get Clint's going to potentially have some sort of change. Obviously, you know, all of these characters are changing on an emotional level, but I wonder if we're going to get some sort of physical change for Cliff.
Yeah, I'm curious about that too, because I'm like, how's his brain surviving in that jar?
I mean, that's fair, but also I feel like I kind of just accept that kind of silly stuff with Doom Patrol.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I honestly don't know what they're planning on. I don't know how it's going to wrap up. It's going to be interesting. And the fact that Larry is carrying around this space parasite that... last episode, I was wondering, is this thing feeding off of him? You're carrying around a parasite that's feeding off of you.
Yeah, I do wonder that, too. One thing I found interesting, Drew... and I'd almost want to get like a screenshot of the two together. I felt like the brain in Clint's body was wearing a very similar suit to what Gargoax was wearing at the resort. Like with the unbuttoned look. It felt very similar. And I almost wonder if it was the same intentionally, because they ultimately settle on the same idea, which is that all of this mission to dominate the world, what has it been worth? I'd rather just relax and enjoy my time and dance. You know what I mean? So I found that really interesting. When I saw the brain dancing at the end, I was like, that looks really, really similar to what Gargoax was wearing.
Interesting. I didn't even notice.
I mean, obviously they're suits, so they're fundamentally going to be not dissimilar, right? But it felt like the style and the way that he was wearing it. I wonder, Drew, if it was an intent, a very subtle detail, but if it was intentional to kind of draw parallels to what ultimately the two do fundamentally decide on the same thing, which is I'm putting this superhero villain, whatever thing to the side, and I'm just going to enjoy retirement. Essentially, I'm just going to enjoy life. It's interesting that we've seen two villains do that. And yet the Doom Patrol still can't figure out how to find that level of peace in their own lives. And I do wonder if that's going to be a factor in the final episode.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. We already saw that the brain and Mala were basically retired. They only came out of retirement because of Madame Rouge. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, so I have whatever the opposite of a shout-out is, a reverse shout-out, a shout-out of shame, I guess. Amazon/Comixology, you idiots. Oh, my gosh. So, as anybody who's familiar with digital comics is probably aware by at this point, Comixology has been owned by Amazon for some time now. But they've been relatively a separate platform, other apart from the login. But they've decided recently, well, it just makes more sense if we combined everything into one app, one thing. So they've combined everything into their Kindle app. That on its own, Drew, probably fine, right? Like that makes sense why you do that. The big problem here, and if you search up Comixology, you will be greeted by a number of articles all saying the same thing, which is this has been a complete and utter disaster. I mean, they could not have possibly have bombed this decision more thoroughly than they have. The reader itself is not designed for comics. So when I was reading this week, Drew, and I'm sure you probably had this experience too, anytime you got to a double page splash, it would zoom way out and you'd get this tiny version of two pages with no option and no ability to make the page more readable. Great, that's really smart. Then, because they've insisted on this merge with the Kindle app,
you can no longer just read it on a web browser, which is how I've been doing it. So I just go on to Comixology and open up separate tabs for each of the comics that we're going to read, and I just kind of click through. Now you've got to go through that. So now when you go to Comixology's website, they introduce you to the new Amazon storefront. They are very happy to sell you any number of comics that you would like, but provide absolutely no way whatsoever for you to be able to find where to read the comics. I had to look it up on a separate website. How do I actually read these? Because as I found out, well, you got to have the Kindle app. Okay, so I download that onto my computer. And then it opens up and none of the comics are available. And I'm like, well, how... What? Well, then how am I supposed to read these stupid things? And so then I texted you, Drew, and I was like, Drew, I don't know if I can read the comics this week because they won't let me. And so then we double check. We see that these comics are indeed purchased. You do indeed own these comics. Okay, let me read them. How is there no button that's like, click this, and it just like brings you to the reader or whatever? No. It's just like, well, you could buy it again if you want. I had, again, go to another website to look up, well, you got to change this setting to show the comics that you have in your library. Well, how is that a setting that I need to put? Yes, please show me the books that I own so that I can read them. How is that not just the default, Drew? How is that not the default?
Okay. So... I read my comics on the Fire Kindle. So every Sunday after the show, I download the ones for the next week. So I had them on my tablet. On Friday, my son had a basketball game. So we went to the basketball game. Well, after the basketball game, my wife wanted to go out with her friend. And I was like, okay, cool. Just drop me off over the mall. I'll hang out there. Got me some food to eat. And I was just going to sit back and read my comics. I open up the Comixology app. No comics. And it, of course, the app was different. I'm like, what the hell? And I'm offline. I cannot download my comics. I'm offline. I can't re-download them. So I get home, and I'm on the internet, and then I cannot figure out how to download these comics. I have to Google it to find out how to download my comics. And, oh man, it was terrible trying to figure out how to download these suckers just so I could read them.
Another thing I read, Drew, and I don't know if this is applying to everyone, but the fact that it happened to even some people, they were saying that once you download the comics, if you then delete them off of whatever, that it was like permanently deleting them, and they had to repurchase the comic after that. And I was like, what? Again, it's like they went out of their way to just make this new change to Comixology as bad as possible. My biggest problem by far is that you go to the Comixology web store now and they will happily sell you any and all comics that they can, but they will not at any point anywhere on the page tell you how to actually read the comic. That is unforgivable, Drew. That is one of those things like we're talking about when we were reviewing One Star Squadron, where they're making this decision for money, right? They'll take your money, but then the thing that you spend the money for, yeah, whatever, figure it out. Google it.
God. You shouldn't have to Google to figure out how to read your comics.
That is just unbelievable. It is unbelievable. And they deserve every bit of scrutiny that they are getting. They are just getting roasted. By fans, by creators are absolutely livid with these changes because, for example, the splash pages are making the pages unreadable. Those are usually some of the best pages, right, for artwork because you've got these full page spreads of artwork. Now all of a sudden they're terrible because you can't read them and they have no way of remedying that. Oh my God. Just pathetic.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. The old Comixology reader was great. It was very user friendly. It was, you know, it was super easy to download comics and read them.
But yeah. And that's why so people are so mad because Comixology, from my own experience, from reading a lot of other people's reactions, the old Comixology was by far the most reader friendly digital platform for comics. And instead, they've replaced it with just the worst possible replacement they could come up with. It's just, it's infuriating.
That it is. All right, and for my shout out, I saw Murder on the Nile last night with Gal Gadot. Enjoyed it. Planning on listening to Earth Station 1's review of it on Tuesday when I go back to work. But I also saw the Batman trailer on the big screen, and we're only about 2 weeks out from it coming out, and I'm very excited about it. I was happy to see the trailer on the big screen. It was awesome.
I can't wait, Drew. I am very, very excited for that movie.
I know, I am too. All right, well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming next week, we've got Batman Catwoman, Black Manta, Titans United, Robbins, The Joker, Batman Urban Legends, I Am Batman, Batgirls, Superman Son of Kal-El, Justice League, 2022 Annual Number 1, we got Detective Comics, and of course our DC television shows, Superman and Lois, Naomi, Peacemaker, and the season finale of Doom Patrol. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.